You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
It is Monday evening. The name of the show is American Whiner. We are on PodcastDetroit.com. My name is Alex. How's everybody doing today? Hope everybody had a good time watching the eclipse. I hope nobody went blind. I didn't go blind, at least as far as I know. I did read, however, that it takes a couple of hours. If you did like sunburn your eyes, it takes a while for that to actually manifest itself. So I suppose at this point, anything's possible. Anyways, my guest tonight is a old friend of mine from my Eastern Michigan days. His name is Mike Nedwick. Mike, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm blind from the sun.
I was going to say, so you caught the eclipse.
I did, and now that I have to wait for that 10 hours before it actually burns into my skull, and I can't see anything, but I'll be okay. I'll be all right, man. You know, us blind people, we can make radio work just fine.
Exactly. You are in the one profession where you don't have to panic about losing your job, so.
I mean, just don't push the wrong button. You can't tell what's the red button anymore.
It's like, what am I going to do? It's like, I'll just feel around, man. It'll be okay.
Yeah, man. So thanks for coming on and talking with us. I always start off the show with the exact same question, and that question is, where were you born?
I was born in the great land of Thailand many years ago. And, you know, I was born in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
You had me for a second there. I wouldn't, if you could have gone on with that and had it actually, I would have believed you for a little bit longer.
Damn it. I could have just been gone, dude. But no, I'm totally born in Grand Rapids, Michigan in 1987, to be exact. So I am 30 years old this year, man.
Oh, when did you turn 30?
I'm already there. Oh, June 18th is when I turned 30, and I've loved every minute ever since leaving my 20s. Because in my 20s, I was, you know, college and all that stuff, so it's like, peace, and now I'm on 30. So what am I supposed to do? I have, like, kids and stuff now? Is that what I'm naturally supposed to do?
Apparently.
I'm guessing so, Alex.
Well, you're a millennial, though, so I don't think that that's quite as expected of us.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I'm supposed to just buy a house and have a dog.
Yeah, you can settle for that.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
But, yeah, dude, actually, your birthday is exactly a month after mine. Mine's May 18th, so, and I just turned 30 a year ago. So we're into our 30s now, and we both have careers. You actually have a really cool career. You are the only person that I went to college with who ended up doing what we went to college for, but we will get to that. So you were born in Grand Rapids, mm-hmm. in 1987. What did your parents do for a living?
My parents actually, it's a very interesting, we could do a whole podcast in alone here. They actually started up a business when I was very young. They ran a floral shop. It was called Burgett Floral at that time, and it's no longer around anymore, but they were florists. They were, you know, so you're making corsages for all the kiddies when they went to high school.
Oh, my God.
But, and, you know, you think about it nowadays, too, is that, well, anyway, they were florists, and, you know, now the flower business is no longer there, so now pretty much they're just doing their different type of jobs, essentially.
Oh, okay. What kind of a student were you?
What kind of a student I was? I was a grade D. Yeah. All right. No, not really. I was actually, I was an okay student. I'm not a valedictorian by any means, but I was very much of that guy that studied well, would get really pissed off if I got a bad grade, and I would say average. How about that?
Average student. Okay. And your childhood in general, like what did you spend your time doing when you weren't at school? What were your interests?
Oh, man, playing video games like Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis and actually hanging out with neighbor kids without the thought of being abducted. Good times.
Yes, those were the days. That was, the 90s were like the last decade where that that happened.
It really was. But, I mean, I have a friend. I still have one of those friends from well over 20 years ago. His name is John. Still hang out with him to this day.
Yeah, yeah. It's I have the same situation, man. I got friends that you know, I was friends with when I was, you know, not 5-10 years old that I still talk to. So again, I don't think that happens as much with this Gen Z that's coming up.
No, it's all about social media, and everyone always like, oh, look what I did with my dog on this weekend. No, it's like you actually had to like find kids in your neighborhood and be like, hey, you want to be friends? I guess. And then you became friends after that.
Yeah, and then you played with Super Soakers or whatever that whatever else it was.
Super Soaker XP 150.
Fuck yeah, man. So how old were you when you got interested in I'm going to ask you this. Right. I'm going to ask you the question this way. How old were you when you first got interested in music? And then we'll talk about how that transitioned into an interest in radio. Because I have a feeling it was probably music before radio, unless I'm wrong, in which case you can correct me.
No, you're completely right. It's kind of cool. And I actually have mentioned this on my radio show a couple times because I do work at a rock station. And, you know, some of the first music that I ever listened to was, strangely enough, you know, obviously what your parents listened to. They were playing Barry Manilow records and Elton John, and especially my mother's favorite artist, John Denver. And, you know, that's what I kind of grew up with was like, you know, the I write the songs that, you know, whatever. And
1970s.
Yeah, exactly. And music soundtracks like Phantom of the Opera, for example, The Lion King, whatever. I grew up on that and symphony music. And then when the late 90s hit, which was like 97, 98, 99, my brother bought three albums on one day. It was Godsmack's first album, okay. Rob Zombie's Hellbilly Deluxe, and Korn's Follow the Leader. And I was listening to Now That's What I Call Music Volume 1 with hit artists like Casey and JoJo and all that stuff.
And Harvey Danger's first hit was on that, I believe.
Yeah. Was it Flagpole Sitta?
It was. Yes, it was.
Yeah. Oh, see, yeah. I was listening to that. And then my brother would get so pissed off when I'd like, no, I want to listen to your CDs. He's like, no, you can't. And I would sneak into his room to take the CDs, and I could listen to Godsmack, and that's when it started clicking, man. It's when it started going.
Yeah, that was you knew that you're like, this is my genre right here. This is what I like. How much older? I assume your brother's older than you. How much older is your brother?
He's about 2 or 3 years, actually. So yeah, 2 or 3 years older.
Okay. Well, so all right. So you get an interest in this harder rock music in the late 90s, which would have made you about, you know, 10, middle school age. So did you ever make your own music or develop an interest in like playing guitar or anything, or did you jump pretty much? You were like, I want to be the guy on the radio who plays this stuff.
No, man, that's funny that you transitioned to that because it was about creating music at first. The moment that, and a lot of artists can say this, which is like, I feel kind of a personal thing because of that. A lot of artists wanted to become rock musicians. The first time they ever saw a four letter band name by the name of Kiss.
Right.
And moment that I saw Kiss on a movie called Detroit Rock City, from that point forward, man, I'm like, I have to be part of this. I have to start a band. And that's exactly what I did with a friend of mine named Brian. We created at the time in high school, pop punk was a huge thing, like Green Day's American Idiot, Sum 41 and stuff. And we started a little band called Ground Switch. And just that audience reaction that I would get from people, all 17 people that would be at our show, it was just intoxicating. I couldn't get enough of it.
What did you, were you a singer or what did you play?
I was singer and bassist. Yeah.
Okay, ground switch. And that was in high school, and you were a pop punk band. How long did ground switch last?
Didn't last very long. It was we started in 2003, and it ended around maybe 2006 when we were starting to kind of think about going to college and stuff, and and that was about it. And I did the whole thing, man. I had the skinny tie and the guy liner and blue hair. It was a great time.
Oh my god, I cannot picture you with that with that type of getup, man. That's
but after that, even after ground switch, I got into another band. It was a bar band. It was me and another guy named Mike that we played guitar, and it was called The Drunk I Love Yous, and we do like 3 hours of covers, and that's when it was a lot more fun too.
Right, you weren't taking it so seriously. You're just showing up and playing.
I hit the microphone. Oh god.
Oh shit! I thought you might have dropped something for a second. But...
No, that's me. I'm good.
So during high school, you're in this band. You're doing your pop punk thing. Then you're doing another one a little bit later. While this is going on, are you thinking about this? Maybe I should consider radio. Or when did that start to come about?
Not at all. High school wasn't even a consideration when it came to radio. It wasn't until I realized that I'm not going to be the next Paul Stanley or Dimebag Darrell. I wasn't going to be, because I still wanted to have that stability of home life where I could have a house. I wanted to have kids. I want to have that family life and not live in a tour bus for years upon years upon years. And there's a lot of people that I respect that can do that. A couple of my friends in Wayland do that every single day. Excuse me. And so I was like, all right, how can I get involved in music and still be able to get up on stage and do my thing? And it's strange enough, I was in college, Grand Rapids Community College, and my favorite radio station at that time was WGRD in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and WRIF in Detroit. And my friend of mine just said, well, have you ever thought about radio? And boom, man, right there. It was everything that I wanted from music, everything I wanted from the attention and everything. It was like the embodiment of everything I wanted to do.
So did you immediately start interning, or what steps did you take to get started once you had that click?
I did. I knew I had to do an internship while I was in college, and it was literally a thing of getting off your ass and going down to the local radio station and saying, hey, I would love to be involved in an internship or something like that. And they're like, all right, yep, fill out this form and we'll get back to you. And lucky for me, they were hiring for promotions interns. And at that time, there was no like standard. There was no like, you have to do this for college credit or anything. They were like, this guy wants to work for free? Well, heck yeah, we'll take him. So I went and worked for the station for free.
And how long did that last? Because you went to community college in Grand Rapids. So how did you transfer to Michigan or Eastern Michigan then?
Well, I knew I wanted to get my bachelor's in, electronic media or radio broadcasting in my field of study, I suppose. And I obviously also wanted that college experience, and I'm still paying for that college experience, unfortunately. But nonetheless, I was working there, and I never lost contact with WGRD, and I wanted to go in a way, as they like to call it in the industry, cut your teeth in a way, mm-hmm. where you're on student radio and doing all this stuff. And fortunately, Eastern Michigan had a student radio station. And so I'm like, well, clearly that's where I need to go. And a lot of people that try to go into broadcasting go to Central Michigan University, which has amazing broadcast facility. But I wanted to go to a place that was away so I could prove to myself that I could do it. And that's exactly what I did at Eagle Radio at Eastern Michigan University.
I remember that. I did that. Obviously, we had the same major, and that's how I met you. I knew you at Eastern, but why don't you tell us about Eastern and what you did there with the Eagle Radio, and then how that transitioned into you graduating and ending up where you're at now.
Sure. When I got to Eastern Michigan, I went there with the intention of getting the job done, because I'm like, well, okay, reverse a little bit. I wanted to be in radio. I obviously wanted to be a promotions director, which, to those that don't know what that is, it's behind the scenes. You're the one setting up the events, booking the events, booking the bands, and basically branding the radio station, because I had a real big interest in marketing. And so I took minor classes in marketing at the College of Business, and obviously my classes. And I remember my teacher, Mr. Hamill, like staring at me and thinking like eyes are going to burn me in the back of the skull.
Yeah, yeah, the Simon Cowell of the Eastern Michigan Electronic Media Program.
Yeah, but there's one thing. He was probably my favorite teacher because he took no crap, man. He
same
was
here.
Like, you're gonna learn.
Yeah, same here. He was the only one who would, like, treat it seriously. I mean, not that the other professors were necessarily bad, but but Hamill was the one that really stuck out for me, too. He knew what he wanted. I remember the very first class, you were there. Maybe you remember this, where he said we had to read something for it was just like out of a book or something. It was just for the very first day of class, and nobody was raising their hand. So trying to look laid back, I raised my hand. I said, "Yeah, I'll get it over with." And he looks at me, he snaps. He's like, "Not with that attitude, you won't." And immediately I was like, "Okay, yeah, this guy is all right." So this is the teacher that you can't fuck with at all.
Yep, exactly.
So you're at Eastern and you go in knowing like, I'm not here to fuck around. I'm here to do this.
Yep.
And so why don't you tell us about Eagle Radio?
All right. Well, first of all, I mean, I was there not to fuck around, but I sure did. I mean, let's just say I got my fuck around time done at GRCC where I like, you know, failed classes and stuff. But when I got to Eastern Michigan, I knew that I'm like, I'm here to get the job done, but at the same time, experience college as much as I can. So at Eagle Radio, at that time, it was WQBR. It wasn't broadcasting to anything. It was not even an internet stream yet. And then, you know, some of the students got really like, you know, why are we doing this if there's really no reward out of it? And the new advisor at that time, her name was Megan. She was really cool, along with Matt Hansen, too. Mm-hmm. And all amazing, great people. And, you know, I felt like a lot of the students that were there we're kind of taking it as like, oh, great, I got to have this experience. But I wanted to do Eagle Radio and say like, well, I want to be able to put this on a resume kind of thing like that. So I'm going to take this opportunity that I have here at college at Eagle Radio and really kind of make it my own and basically do stuff and tell like the advisors like, hey, I'm going to do this. And cool. And they're like, yeah, thank you. Awesome. And so I built my own show as we normally did. And I built imaging. But one of my most biggest achievements I did there, and I wish it would have continued, but obviously, you know, the interest waned, is that I created an event called the Rock-O-Matic Showcase. And it was booked by me with help along with a gentleman named Patrick and Christy. And we basically, I booked bands around Ypsilanti, Michigan, like, hey, play our Eagle Radio Rock-O-Matic Showcase. Get the station out there. Get it moving. And that taught me a lot about building an event, promoting an event, and really bringing more to the community and also showing myself that, hey, I can do this and I can bring this to other radio stations and be like, hey, hire me. Look what I can do. So I really took advantage of my time at Eagle Radio. And obviously, aside from the promotions director stuff, really learned how to develop a personality on air too.
Well, it's it sounds like you pretty much fulfilled exactly what you wanted out of you literally were the promotions director. You had this station that nobody was really doing anything with. And you came, I remember it was you and then another friend of ours, Chris Nelson, had a show. And,
Chris.
Because I remember when I did it. It was the actual station was like in this closet, tucked away in the in the back of the Cork building, which is the theater building.
Yeah.
And then by the time you guys were done with it, it had been moved to the library basement. It was really well lit. Everything was up to date. The equipment was up to date, and it was a complete 360 from 180 rather from what it had started off as. And I remember your shows too. I remember those Rock-O-Matic shows as well.
Those were a blast. I shout out to the Outer Vibe for playing my show.
Hell yeah, man. Nick Hosford. Yeah, I remember him. I'm trying to get him on the podcast. I haven't been able to track him down yet, but he's on my list.
I'll give him a call. I'll let him know.
Oh, thanks, man. Awesome. When did you graduate from Eastern? Cause I graduated in 2009 and I can't remember if you were with me or not.
I wasn't. I was actually graduating with Chris in 2010 is when I graduated.
Okay. So what happened after Eastern then? And did you go right? Because I should say you're in Cedar Rapids, not Rock 108. And you're the you are on air talent. You are basically the equivalent of Meltdown on the riff for
pretty
Rock
much
108,
yeah.
Right. So how did how between Eastern and where you're at now, what happened and how did you end up in Cedar Rapids?
Oh, all sorts of stuff. Man, where does it even begin? I went back because obviously I had that connection at WGRD. And mind you, it's not only just GRD, but it was also a classic hit station, Top 40, and a soft favorite station, too, or soft hit, soft AC, as they call it. But my true heart, obviously, was in rock music. And I basically went back and worked as a promotions assistant, not a director. And it was super part time. You could basically pick when you wanted to work, which basically meant I picked everything I could just to be in the station, to be visible, to eventually hopefully become that guy that would be the promotions director. Mm-hmm. And develop myself to be on air. And so at that time, I actually worked three jobs, one of them obviously being at the radio station, one of them being at GameStop as a manager, and also working at the city of Grand Rapids, cleaning up parks, which was absolutely sometimes some of the most disgusting work you will ever see.
Oh, yeah.
And even at one point, I was a cemetery worker where I would actually dig graves and haul caskets and bury them in mow lawns.
Oh, my God. Now, that's a fucking metal job right there, though. That's,
yeah, it is.
What did you do before you were a DJ? Oh, man, I was a grave digger. Like, that's pretty fucking awesome. So you went back to Grand Rapids and you basically continued to build your resume.
I did. I want to say, you know, doing obviously the radio stuff, but I was just working every single show and every single remote I could. And when it all really kind of finally came together, my guy who's actually in WCSX in Detroit now by the name of JT was the promotions director or the product. Yeah, the guy. He was the guy. And I told him, like, hey, I really want to do a heavy metal show kind of thing. You know, I want to do a metal show. And he told me, he's like, well, develop a 1 hour long demo, which that's a lot of work.
Yes, it is.
That's not easy, man. And I built this whole package and I actually I gave him a moon pie and a moon pie sandwich on my resume. And I wrote on it, I'm like, if you want only the best, you have to bark at the. So, and that's what I did. And he's like, and he saw that I had potential and passion. And JT is really the reason why I'm even doing what I do today, because he gave me an opportunity. And he said, you know what, let's stick you on Sunday nights, 7 to midnight, you know, just to kind of get you moving, get you working. And that was my first ever big time radio shift where that all kind of came together. And then, you know, from that point forward, after I was doing a lot of on-air stuff, I was really starting to develop this personality as Metalhead Ned. I have t-shirts even. I'll send you one.
Awesome,
and I started, like, you know, all right, I've got this personality and I want to be promotions director and I want to do all this stuff. And I started just writing record labels when bands would come to town. I'm like, hey, can I interview you? And thankfully, at that time, the digital media world was exploding and YouTube was big, and it wasn't just posting it on air anymore. You could post it on YouTube and everyone could see it. And a lot of good things came out of that. And then my old guy that was a promotions director, his name is Dave, who was in Detroit as well, too. Good old Dave Kim. He had to leave because he was going to Detroit. And then I fortunately got to slip into his job and I attained the job that I wanted of promotions director.
And was that the point when you were finally able to quit your GameStop and your cemetery jobs and everything else?
Oh, yeah, it was. It was wonderful. It was so great having one job. But I'll tell you, and this is where it kind of progresses to kind of where I'm at now. As a promotions director, it was a great job. I loved it. And but it's very behind the scenes, very high stress. You're always dealing with a lot of stuff. And I realized after all my years in college of wanting to be that promotions director and wanting to be that guy, I admitted to myself that I can't do this job, man. I can't. And that's where my boss at that time, named Tom Cook, He said, Ned, there's this job out in Waterloo, Iowa, Cedar Rapids, where I'm from. And he's like, you have to be on air. He's like, that's where you lie. He's like, when you get up on stage and do your thing and when you're on air, he's like, you become this whole human being that I can tell that you need to be on air. He's like, you're doing great at your job, but you are worth well more on air. And that's where eventually he made that connection for me. And he knew it. He freaking knew it, man. And he made that connection for me and sent me. And here I am at Rock 108, Iowa's Pure Rock in Iowa, Waterloo, Cedar Falls, Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
And there we go. And how long have you been there now?
A year and 9 months.
Year and 9 months. Well, yeah, that's fucking awesome, man. That's, like I said, it's so nice to hear, you know, some few people my age ended up, you know, had the actual smooth or relatively smooth trajectory from college into a career that they actually wanted.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm sure there are other people that we went to school with that ended up working in the industry, but you were the only one that actually, and I remember even talking to you about it back in college, and I was like, this guy, I could tell, you know, you said, I'm not here to fuck around. And I just could tell, like, from the way that you approached everything, I was like, this guy is probably, you know, if there's anybody in this classroom who's actually going to go on to succeed in this, it's probably Ned Wick. So
he's going to do the radio, my friend.
Yep. I got a couple. We have 4 minutes left before the break. I got a couple quick questions here, and I'll just fire them off of you. Who's you? Because you interview a lot. You have an interview with Bruce Campbell coming up.
So I do tomorrow. I'm very excited.
But who has been your favorite interview that you've done so far?
I you know, when I was thinking about that question, I'm just like, crap.
So hard like, to pick one, so, right?
There's so many of them, but if I was to pick one of them, and it definitely has to be Phil Anselmo of Pantera, because that interview did a lot for me. You know, I'll give you a couple. How about that?
Okay.
Phil Anselmo from Pantera, Odorous Dave Brocky Arungus from Gwar, absolutely amazing guy. There was that other one too. And one that came by super surprise was Alice Cooper. And I was told that, you know, oh, you're going to be interviewing I almost said Tommy Thayer. Tommy, what's his stupid name from Motley Crue?
Tommy Lee.
Tommy Lee. He's like, okay, you're going to be interviewing Tommy Lee. I'm like, okay. And then he picks up the phone. I'm like, hey, Tommy, how's it going? He's like, hey, Alice is here too. And I'm like, what? Because Alice Cooper was such a huge inspiration to me too. So, and I might even be selling myself short on that. I forget people I've interviewed after a while. So, Brendan Small from Death Clock. Loved that interview, man.
All right. Well, goddamn. I'm not sure if how this. Do you have like callers or people that call in on your show?
I do.
Do you have a favorite caller?
It's hard to say favorite caller. I would have to say it kind of goes back to my WGRD days, and there was this lady who always called in. And she goes by Awesome Amy, and she was just crazy. but she would call in and she'd talk for hours, and I'm just like, Amy, I gotta go to work. But she just talked, and that was always cool because maybe I brightened up her day for that day.
Yeah. And then they also help you fill airtime too. When that one caller calls in, you're like, all right, the next 10 minutes are full. You know, don't need to worry about it.
All right, dude.
All right. Well, last question here. What are your plans for the future? What do you got coming up besides the Bruce Campbell interview tomorrow?
Well, we have Rock 108's University Avenue Cruise, which is like this big, like kind of big cruise we run with a bunch of old school classic cars. Obviously, interviewing Bruce Campbell is one of my things. I also have an official website coming up here very soon called nedonair.com. I basically just have to pay for the domain because I'm boring. And I'm also doing a lot more video game streaming, too. So, I mean, instead of just doing stuff on air, I do a lot of stuff online, too, where I can interact with audiences. So that's just a smidge of all the ideas and plans that I have going on.
All right, man. Well, we're going to take a quick break here. Be about a little under 10 minutes. And when we come back, we are going to ask Mike Nedwick what he wants to whine about. So we will be right back on PodcastDetroit.com. We'll be right back.
yes, I'm in. I was looking for an answer and found the sunny side of sin. Lord, 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 why do you make me work so hard? The devil's chasing after me. I'm shopping for a savior of my own.
American Whiner, Monday evening podcast, Detroit.com. We are back. We're going to jump right into the second half, which is the entire point of the show. So here we go. Mr. Mike Nedwick, what do you want to whine about?
Well, first of all, credit to Wayland. I love those guys from Grand Rapids,
holy
Michigan.
Shit. I'd never heard of them, dude. I'll be honest. That fucking kicks ass. I'll be listening to them on the way home.
Oh, please do, man. They just released a new music video, Shopping for a Savior. Absolutely amazing.
Definitely, man. Well, right. I'm sure you don't want to whine about them, but...
all the love to those guys beyond anything. But the thing I want to whine about, though, man, is I got to say, I was thinking about what topic I should whine about, and it's one that I can say I appreciate, but also hate at the same time, and that's the world of social media.
Oh man. Yeah, so much to get into.
And you know, you and I kind of mentioned it a little just briefly, like a little bit earlier. And I guess what I can start with that is that first of all, what it's done for me, it's done a lot of great things. It's given me the ability to do what I love doing for radio, and that's going beyond the airwaves of doing YouTube videos and live streaming and all that stuff. But at the same time, you know, aside from all the things that are good about it, the stuff that's bad about it is the fact that I get pretty whiny about the fact that it's taken over our lives to the point where, you know, I was going camping a couple days ago or a couple weeks ago in Ludington, Michigan, and I looked over at a camping site and this entire family was just sitting on their phones. I'm like, really? Come on, man. Yeah, and yeah. Like, get away from the digital world for at least a weekend and spend time with your family.
Yeah, dude. I was camping a couple days ago myself, but I was up in northern Wisconsin where there is no cell service. And so mm-hmm. I couldn't look at my Facebook and all that, even if I wanted to. And I hate to admit it, but I was feeling like a little bit of withdrawal over it. I would go like at night, I would be falling asleep and I would feel kind of weird that like if I wanted to check my Facebook right now, like I do when I can't sleep, I wouldn't be able to. So it's an addiction, man. It is turning into an addiction. And they always you've probably seen that meme where it's all the people reading the newspapers on the train in like the 1940s and they're saying, "Oh, technology is driving us apart." But I really think that this is different. This is so ubiquitous that comparing a smartphone to a newspaper just doesn't, it's not an accurate, it's total false equivalency in my opinion.
Very much so. And the fact, and the ease too. At one point, I remember, I don't have kids yet. I hope to in the next few years. But one of the things that I always thought to myself is like, you know what? My kids are not going to have cell phones till the age of like 15 or whatever and whatnot. Uh-huh. But the more I think about it, I'm like, I can't make that possible anymore. I mean, like, you feel like you have to know where your kids are at all times with a smartwatch or an app that tells you where they are. I mean, when I was younger and I'd hang out with John in my old neighborhood, like the time to go home was when the streetlights came on and we went home. And even sometimes, even before that, we'd just be in the neighborhood. No one would know there. I mean, I had Super Nintendo and gaming consoles, but we wanted to go outside and my parents didn't have to worry about where we were. But thanks to digital social media and stuff, we know where everyone's at, what everyone's doing, and in so many different ways. And there's some greatness to that, obviously, because you can keep a check on your kids and that's very important. But at the same time, you know, it's like, I don't even know where to go.
Well, I see what you're saying, man. It's the problem is like, it's a double-edged sword because, you know, this interview happened because of Facebook. I love Facebook. I was thinking about this the other day that because I'm able to keep in touch with so many people that I would have lost touch with otherwise. But mm-hmm. at the same time, the people that are in charge of it, all of a sudden they just can't help themselves and they always end up using it for, you know, corporate gain and surveillance and things that are completely opposite to a democratic society, you know, that we're the type of society that we're supposed to have. So it continues to evolve too. You know, Caitlin and I were just talking about kids nowadays. You know, Facebook is old to them. Facebook is like for adults, and that is just so fucking weird to me. Nowadays they use Snapchat, which I have a Snapchat. I don't like Snapchat. I don't understand the appeal of Snapchat. But apparently that's like what they use. That's their go-to social media is Snapchat.
Dude, I'm not going to lie. I have a Snapchat and I use it a lot.
I don't have a problem with people that do. I'm just saying for me, like I remember when Facebook came out, and it took me like 3 years to get a Facebook because I knew that as soon as I had one, I was going to use it all the fucking time. And I was right. And I'm just like, I remember when Snapchat came out and my girlfriend at the time was like, "You don't have a Snapchat? What the fuck is wrong with you? How do you talk to anybody?" I'm like, I talk to them normally. Like I'm talking to you right now. I talk to them in person, you know, or on the phone. But she gave me a Snapchat and I don't have, you know, I like my life, but I don't think I need to share every freaking moment of my life with the outer world, even if it does only last and, you know, for a couple of seconds or however long the Snapchats last.
Well, another thing too, and to go with Snapchat too, is that I do utilize it a lot for radio station stuff because, you know, that's just, like I've mentioned before, I love being the attention hog and people can follow me on there and blah, 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 blah. Everyone gets to see what Ned's doing, you know, but there another downfall about that is like, you know, there's nothing more exciting or fun when you go to grandma's house or mom and dad's house and they have these piles of photo albums just sitting up on the wall and you get to sit down and have a family moment where you're just sitting and reading these photo albums. My grandmother-in-law, whatever you want to call her, I don't know, but she has all these massive photo albums. And then I think about my wife and I, and we've been married for 4 years and we have maybe like a photo album And that's it. And I'm like, well, where are all of our photos? Where are all of our memories? Where's all of our videos of us in our first years of marriage and stuff? Well, that's right. They're in the digital world, or they've been deleted long time ago. And it's like, well, you know, that old pastime of sitting down and looking at a photo album together, just it's not going to be there, I think, in the next maybe 15 or 20 years. And that sucks, because I always found that to be fun. And it's just not there, because it's all digital. And I mean, I guess you could go on your photo Facebook bleh, or whatever, but it's just not the same as flipping through and looking.
Yeah, and that gets back to what we were talking about before, which is sort of the lack of personal face-to-face interaction with people, which is that's really what's been lost with all this. People, they do studies now where it says kids and people in general are way lonelier than they used to be, because you cannot replace face-to-face interaction with another real person. You can't replace that with a little screen of light. It just doesn't work. And you know, like you said, those family moments. I remember I was in – my mom is from Duluth, Minnesota, and we went up there at the end of June with her family, and we're just hanging out. And my grandpa, who turned 80 that weekend, busted out his old slide machine. And we were looking at pictures of my mom when she was, you know, a little kid going to Disney World and stuff. And it was a real moment. Like, I'll remember that moment for the rest of my life. I took a picture of it on my phone. That's you know, I documented it. The moments like that, it's not quite the same when, you know, like you said, in another, you know, when you have your kids in another 10 years or whatever, you're looking back and saying, oh, here's when you were a baby, and you're all crowded around the smartphone, or you're all, you know, everybody's brain has been, you know, wired into whatever network, and, you know, you guys are just looking at it on the wall, or however they do it by then. Yeah. It's something definitely has been lost. There's a certain warmth and a certain, I don't know, like a certain camaraderie, I guess, that has been sort of shriveled in the wake of all this this digital progress. So
right, and I think another thing too with digital stuff in general is that, you know, we look forward. I mean, thanks to like cell phones and everything, how, I mean, landlines are just really no longer a thing anymore. Yeah. But you know, I go to like the Sprint store or whatever, and I lease my phone now, I guess that's the thing. And then I think about, because I'm kind of I like to save the environment as much as I can. I recycle, I do what I can. But I bring my phone that works perfectly fine, and it's already outdated like 3 days after I walk out of the store.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, well, where does this old phone go to? Are they properly recycling it? And why do we always need I guess it's that age old term of the next big thing, I suppose, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And like I have an iPhone, and it's 2.5 years old now, and there's a new one coming out. And it's not like, it'd be one thing if they allow you to upgrade and you don't really have to pay anything. It's just like, well, you pay us our monthly bill, so you can, you know, you can just, here's the latest phone or whatever. But like, that's another $300, $400 that these people that buy the new phone every year are spending. And I'm just like, I can't do that. I can't. It took me a year to pay off the phone that I bought, which was the very first brand new phone I'd ever bought in my life. And I was 28 when that happened. So that's another level to it, is just the maintaining, you know, keeping up with the rest of the trends or whatever.
Very much. And trending. That's a big term, I know. And with the digital world kind of going back with social, to reverse us back into social media, that is, I think a lot of people use social media too, to really get a satisfaction and, out of a lot of things, and maybe a quick satisfaction. And then I don't want to go too far into it, because I'm not political by any means whatsoever. I'm sure that could be a whole nother podcast in general.
Oh, yeah.
But people posting things, they only read headlines of articles. They never read the actual article themselves. And then everyone will post their opinion, and then there's this defense mechanism of being behind the safety of the wall. People, there would never, ever be a time where someone would call me at the radio station to tell me, Ned, you suck. You're terrible at your job, and you're just awful. But they will gladly send an email with some horrific things to say. Just no problem. I'm just like, there's so much defense behind, and people always feel as though it's okay that I wrote this because it's on the internet, and what are they going to do?
Yeah, it's just what you do on the internet. And that's that transitions to real life, though, eventually. If somebody does that enough, then people get comfortable with it. And then you're right. I think Louis C.K. had an awesome sketch about this. It wasn't quite about this literally, but it was the same sentiment. And that was, you know, imagine saying the type of shit that you say to people when you're driving. Imagine saying that to them if you were in an elevator with them, like being face to face with somebody. Your body just doesn't want to scream aggressive things. Whereas, like you were saying, if it's just your words and it's sent through this chain of information that makes you invisible to whoever is receiving it, all of a sudden your courage goes up tenfold. And
it really does.
It's almost it's kind of like being drunk in a way. Your social inhibitions just kind of go by the wayside. And I remember, dude, I was just listening to an interview with Dave Chappelle the other day, and apparently he was in at the unveiling of the iPhone in 2007. And he said, if I'd have known what Steve Jobs was doing, I would have run up and shoved a pencil in his chest, because now he's like, I haven't read a book in years, but I consume, like you were saying, these little hors d'oeuvres of information, these little headlines. And that's all my attention span will allow me to really consume on a regular basis. And again, it feels like something has been lost.
100%. And we scroll through life. I mean, even in the morning, it's... Social media has become a routine in a way where you wake up and back in the day, obviously you'd turn on the morning news or turn on whatever it may, or read the newspaper, whatever it is. In a way, it just evolved, essentially, is what it did. But, you know, I think every single morning I wake up and my phone's on and I'm scrolling through Facebook, because that's how I get it, I guess. And
yeah, that's your window to the world. That's the ritual that you go through. I have my ritual too, man. Even when I go to work, you know, like I'll, you know, you have your, you know, and when I wake up in the morning, I have the order in which I check everything. I do Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, my email, Twitter. And it's just like, and if I could, like I was saying earlier, when I was camping, not being able to do that produced sort of this strange anxiety within me. It wasn't overwhelming by any means, but it was definitely there. And yeah, dude, there's really no dopamine rush like there is turning on your phone and seeing that you have three notifications. Somebody liked your status. Yeah, or whatever.
Give me all of it. It's good.
But yeah, they say that we get an actual, like, our brains give us a little bit of happy chemicals every time we see that little red dot.
That's so weird, man. And you know, it's interesting that phones, you know, I say I have a phone here. I don't really have a phone. I have a social media device.
Yes.
And it just happens to use cell phone airwaves or whatever in order to get everything else. I think I really, when it comes down to it, I talk to my wife on this phone and my parents when they call me randomly.
Yeah, you're right. They're really not phones. We call them phones, but they are pocket computers. That's what they are.
Yeah, they should change iPhone to something else. I don't know what, but it should be something else. Not an iPhone, but it's brand recognition at that point. Can't mess with that.
Yeah. Well, I think like iDevice or something like that might.
iDevice. I can see that. That'd be perfect. Well, they already have Android, so whatever.
Yeah. There you go, man. Well, so I guess we got about 5 minutes left here. So to sum up everything, what would you say? Like, I mean, because I try to end the show with like on a note of hope. And like we were saying, it's not all bad, but like as far as what should we do to sort of offset the more negative effects of this social media phenomenon, in your opinion?
I think when it comes down to it, obviously utilize it. I utilize it for my career a lot. If I didn't have Facebook, obviously, just like you and me, this podcast wouldn't be happening. We wouldn't have that opportunity. And to kind of go back to one more thing, my high school class was having a 10-year anniversary, and a lot of people were just like, why?
Yeah. That's another thing. Social media absolutely killed high school reunions.
Oh, man. We all know what we're doing. We all know what kids have, and you're good to go. But to kind of wrap it up, you know, where is social media going? Who knows? I mean, it's really become part of everything. It's that sense of, involvement, and there is a lot of positives about it, but I also don't want social media to be the thing that takes over the ways of face-to-face social interaction, because of things like Tinder and Plenty of Fish and all that stuff. It's kind of taken away that whole mystery of life, essentially, you know. And if you found your lover or your girlfriend or boyfriend on Tinder, rock and roll. As long as you're happy, rock and roll. Do what you want to do. But, you know, there's part of you that's like, you know, hey, we met on, you know, a ship called Titanic 2 or something like that. And, you know, I guess that sense of mystique is no longer there, and everything is out there for everyone to see. And there's obviously some good in that, but at some times, remember that your friends are there, your family's there, and they're human beings. They're not just letters or typing a text or something like that. And sometimes, instead of just sending a text, maybe give them a call, maybe do a, and thankfully there's things called FaceTime these days, and do that, you know, interact with people and not just send a text. Because I think, just like the dopamine thing you said a little earlier, I think instead of just getting that little notification, sending that whole thought of someone cares a little bit is always such a bigger thing. And utilize social media to improve your interpersonal relationships, as opposed to, in a way, condemning them, which you can do so easily just by sending that terrible little text.
Absolutely. And by the face-to-face interaction, you may find that you that's what you're looking for. That's what you've been looking for all along.
Yeah,
that's the social nourishment that you need. All right, man. Well, we're going to wrap it up here. Mike, dude, thank you so much for coming on, man. I really enjoyed this.
Blessed, man. Congrats on the podcast. It's amazing. It's so much fun.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And we'll look for your Net On Air website, and people can listen to you on Rock 108. What are the call, the numbers and the letters and all that?
It would be 107.9 KFMW, but you can find us at rock108.com. I'm on every single day, 2 to 7 p.m. Central Time, so 3 to 8 Eastern Standard Time. And then you can also download the app, which is for free from Google Play or Apple Store, and you can find me all there. Also, find me on Facebook, Ned Rock 108, Twitter and Instagram, Ned On Air, and, of course, Snapchat. You can do Rock underscore 108. You see, Alex, I'm on all of them.
Yeah, there you go, man. Well, you just heard it, so go check them out. And, Mike, again, thank you so much for coming on. I will be back next Wednesday with a good friend of mine, and we will talk to you then. So again, the show is called American Whiner. We are on podcastdetroit.com. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next time.